This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
A primary split. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Wednesday, May 18th. Glad you could be with us. And here's what's up this hour.
Hillary Clinton has declared victory in Kentucky, while Bernie Sanders easily captured the Oregon primary. Meanwhile, hear how his Senate colleagues are reacting to the staying power of Sanders.
Over a veto threat from the White House, the Senate has cleared the way for 9/11 victims to sue Saudi Arabia.
New overtime rules are expected from the Labor Department today, making 4.5 million more Americans eligible for time and a half.
And a list of our biggest financial regrets.
We found that three-quarters of Americans have some sort of financial regret. And, you know, at the top of the list, you know, a lot of people might think it would be debt, but we actually found debt, the worries about debt were further down the list. The biggest financial regrets revolved around not saving enough.
Greg McBride at Bankrate.com on what we might do differently with our money if we had a second chance. He's here in about 20 minutes. Democratic presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders each picked up primary wins last night. It was yet another demonstration of how the party refuses to fall in line behind Mrs. Clinton. The former Secretary of State narrowly won Kentucky, where the two candidates will likely split the 55 delegates. In Oregon, where Mr. Sanders cruised to victory, he'll take only a handful more of the 61 delegates that were awarded.
We just won Oregon. And we're going to win California.
Mrs. Clinton remains more than 100 delegates short of sealing the deal, with the final set of major contests, including California, scheduled for June 7th. Meanwhile, Mr. Sanders, the senator from Vermont, yesterday joined his supporters in criticizing the Nevada Democratic Party after Saturday's events. They're arguing that the state party chairwoman did not allow a headcount on a disputed rules change, and that 64 delegates to the state convention were not given a hearing before being ruled ineligible. Well, Donald Trump, in an exclusive interview with Fox News' Megyn Kelly, has responded to critics of his barbed campaign style by saying he never would have been successful in the primary race if he had acted presidential and held back on hitting his political rivals. The GOP presidential candidate discussed a range of topics, from his tone in debates to his past clashes with Ms. Kelly. Their first clash, you'll recall, came in the opening debate when she asked him about disparaging comments about women.
I thought it was unfair. First of all, I didn't think it was really a question. I thought it was more of a statement. I don't really blame you because you're doing your thing. But from my standpoint, I don't have to like it.
Mr. Trump conceded that in looking back, he, quote, absolutely has regrets, but he did not go into detail. Mr. Trump, by the way, also briefly discussed his personal life and how his older brother Fred died after a battle with alcoholism. Mr. Trump says he has never had a glass of alcohol. Well, few members of the Senate would have predicted a year ago that Bernie Sanders would be the last of several of their colleagues remaining in the final stretches of the presidential primary race. But to the surprise of many on Capitol Hill, Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Peterson says Mr. Sanders has stayed in the primary race longer than any of his rivals across the aisle, like Texas Senator Ted Cruz or Florida Senator Marco Rubio. Christina, what are you hearing?
Senator Ted Cruz returned to Washington and returned to the chamber, and he was the final of the four Republican senators who ran for president to end his campaign and come back to Washington. And one sort of surprising thing that it highlighted was that Bernie Sanders is still out there. And of the five senators who ran for president this year, I don't think many people in the Senate would have predicted a year ago that Bernie Sanders would have outlasted everyone else.
Yeah. As you point out in the story, I mean, the basic premise for Senator Sanders was to promote liberal policies, right, and drag Hillary Clinton more left.
Exactly. And unlike Senators Cruz and Rubio, who had made pretty clear for a good long while that they had presidential ambitions, it wasn't really clear that Senator Sanders had that, and it really did seem to be more of an ideological push for him, and he's definitely accomplished that. You know, there's been a lot of talk about liberal policies in the Democratic primary, and so I think people were really surprised that his campaign resonated with so many people and took off in the way it did, and that it's still ongoing.
Now, I forgot how many senators were in the race on the Republican side. Cruz, Rubio, Lindsey Graham from South Carolina.
Lindsey Graham, yeah. There were four of them on the Republican side out of a field of 17, and eventually all four of them have dropped out.
Wow. All right, so who's saying what now about Mr. Sanders' staying power?
Well, there are some Democrats who have been urging him to get out of the race so that Hillary Clinton can just focus on her general election matchup against Donald Trump. But there are other people who are saying, you know, what he is talking about is really resonating with the public. His focus on Wall Street regulation, climate change, college affordability, these are issues that people really want to be talking about. And there's no reason to anger the Democratic electorate by trying to force him to get out before the convention. So there's sort of a split opinion among Democrats. Republicans who, you know, are critical of the Democratic candidates say that his popularity has something to do with the unpopularity of Mrs. Clinton and the investigation of her email servers and Benghazi, and that he is just a more appealing alternative than her. And he is still winning contests, so, you know, there's really no incentive for him to bow out now, especially since he is getting the donations to keep his campaign funded.
We're speaking with Christina Peterson, Wall Street Journal reporter on Capitol Hill. Her piece is called Bernie Sanders' Staying Power in Presidential Race Surprises Senators. Even Republican senators have been giving him credit.
Yeah, they really are. They're saying, you know, he really exceeded people's expectations. You know, he's 74 and still has the energy to barnstorm the country, and people are admiring of that.
That's great. You don't hear that from the Democratic side, though, about the Republican senators, I don't think.
No, less often.
Anybody saying, I guess, on the Republican side that he should step out? Or do Republicans, you know, are they saying these nice things so he will stay in and further, I don't know, slow down Mrs. Clinton?
Well, I'm sure there are some Republican strategists who think that having a divided Democratic electorate is not a bad thing for them. Republicans, of course, are still dealing with their own fractures over whether they can coalesce around Donald Trump by the time of the convention. So having Democrats divided is convenient for them. But, you know, I think for senators, they are mostly just sort of impressed with his stamina.
Yeah, even the elder senators, right? Was it Orrin Hatch you said?
Yeah, Orrin Hatch said at his age, I'm impressed that he's still out there. Of course, Senator Hatch is 82, so that is saying something.
Thanks, Christina. Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Peterson from Capitol Hill. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Let's take a moment to share a message from our sponsor, Google. You might be surprised how many people are looking for your business on Google every day, not necessarily by name, but by the products or services that your business offers. When people are searching for these things, it means they're interested in them, and that's exactly when your business should be there. The good news is it's easy to make that happen. Just run an ad on Google. You don't have to be a marketing genius either. Creating an ad takes just a few minutes. Head on over to g.co/GordonDeal to learn more. There's even a special offer waiting for you. That's g.co/GordonDeal.
You're a small to mid-sized business with 300 to 3,000 employees. You face the same network security challenges as big businesses do, but can't support a big IT investment, leaving your doors open to advanced cyber threats. Barracuda Next Generation Firewalls provide all the core features of enterprise firewalls and UTMs, but without hidden costs and deployment hurdles, making owning a big business firewall no big deal for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda Next Gen Firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/firewalls.
Thanks for being with us. The Senate has passed legislation that would allow families of September 11th victims to sue Saudi Arabia's government for damages, setting up a potential showdown with the White House, which has threatened a veto. The Saudis, who deny responsibility, had said they might sell up to $750 billion in U.S. securities and other American assets in retaliation if it became law. New York Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer does not agree with the White House position.
The families of the victims of terror attacks should be able to hold the perpetrators, even if it's a country, a nation, accountable.
The Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act, or JASTA, must next be taken up by the House. A hearing on that measure is expected in the near future. If it became law, JASTA would remove the sovereign immunity, preventing lawsuits against governments for countries found to be involved in terrorist attacks on U.S. soil. 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, after months of discord within the GOP, the Democrats are now displaying signs that they could have trouble uniting around frontrunner Hillary Clinton's candidacy. Bernie Sanders again vowed to stay in the race until the end after winning the Oregon primary.
In a sense, the beginning of the final push to win California.
After taking Kentucky, Clinton is just 92 delegates short of clinching the nomination. Meanwhile, Clinton has filed financial documents showing that in 2015, she earned more than $5 million in royalties from her book Hard Choices and about $1.5 million in speaking fees. And Donald Trump has filed new financial documents describing his personal wealth. Trump says he submitted his candidate financial disclosure form to the Federal Election Commission. It'll be publicly available after an initial review by the government and should offer updated information about the value of Trump's assets and the revenue produced by his businesses. U.S. prosecutors are investigating claims that dozens of top Russian athletes participated in a sophisticated state-sponsored doping program. The New York Times says the probe is looking at athletes, government officials in Russia, anti-doping authorities, and people who may have benefited from the doping scheme.
The number one pick in the 2016 NBA draft goes to the Philadelphia 76ers.
Good news for the Sixers because they finished 10-72 this year. The Lakers will have the number two pick in June's NBA draft, while the Celtics will go third. The remainder of the 14 teams are slotted in the inverse order of their one-loss record. Although there may be more male students pursuing math and science degrees, it's actually girls who test better in STEM fields. Eighth grade girls score an average of 3.5 points higher than boys on the first ever national test of technology and engineering literacy administered by the federal government. The exam was given to 21,500 students in 840 public and private schools across the country. And Google is expected to dive deeper into virtual reality and artificial intelligence during an annual conference today that serves as a launching pad for its latest products and innovations. Analysts expect Google to soon release a VR device to compete with Facebook's new Oculus Rift headset.
Excellent. That stuff is funky. I'm not into video games, but that virtual reality
stuff.
You
ready? Put those weird glasses on and okay.
That's right.
We'll take a picture of you.
Hey, glad you're back, by the way. Jen's been off the past couple of days.
Thank you.
You know, just jetted off to Europe for a few days. since you were in Amsterdam.
Yes.
At least for a couple of days. This does beg the follow-up question. How much weed did you smoke while there?
Did not do it, but it is everywhere.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. The old coffee houses. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You just smell it everywhere?
Oh,
pretty
yeah.
much?
Yep.
I tried to trap her there. 23 minutes now after the hour. Thanks for being with us. Time now for a finance update, and it's brought to you by Lexington Hotels. Get away and stay at Lexington Inns and Hotels. With great rates and exceptional quality, our guests always come first. Visit LexingtonHotels.com today. Are there financial decisions you would have made differently over the years? Bankrate.com is a new survey that measures Americans' money regrets. Greg McBride is chief financial analyst at Bankrate. Greg, give us some findings.
The biggest financial regrets revolved around not saving enough. Specifically, the biggest being that people regret not starting to save for retirement early enough. And the second most common financial regret was not having enough saved for emergencies, that all-important rainy day fund that too many people lack.
So was the survey done among fairly older folks who knew that they weren't going to have enough in retirement, or were these some younger folks who were saying they were far behind?
Well, this was a nationally representative sample, but, you know, as we dug a little bit deeper into the numbers, we did, you know, see some interesting differences by age. You know, in particular, that concern about not saving enough for retirement, as a regret, it grew in prevalence with age. So as people get closer to retirement, more and more, they were citing the fact that they didn't start saving for retirement early enough as their biggest regret. Concerns about debt, I mentioned they were further down the list. Those worries decline with age to the point where among senior citizens, worries about debt are almost imperceptible. So, okay. Having those regrets, it just doesn't even register at that age.
I see. All right. So Two on the list, two were connected to education. One, not saving enough for, say, higher education. And the other one was excessive student loan debt. How about those numbers?
Yeah, only 9% of Americans said that, you know, taking on too much student loan debt was their biggest regret. And, you know, as expected, millennials, this was their, you know, it was dominated by the millennials. Again, this is one that we see that as a regret, it declines with age. So I think a lot of millennials that, you know, they have that student loan debt now. I think 10 years from now, 20 years from now, they're going to feel a lot different. When their careers have continued to progress, when that education has paid off handsomely over the years, and that loan balance continues to decline, you know, I think you're going to see that, you know, as in terms of regrets, that one goes away. But if you don't seize the opportunity to start saving for retirement and emergencies as early as possible, that those regrets will only grow.
We're speaking with Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com, talking about their new survey about how Americans have these big financial regrets. We talked about emergency savings before, some people regretting that they don't have enough. Do you consider credit card availability as emergency savings if, say, you're not carrying a balance month to month?
No, and let's not fool ourselves. I mean, people have kind of tried to go down that route with saving the same thing with regard to their home equity line of credit, that, okay, you know, they're kind of using that as their emergency backstop. And, you know, if you're going to use that as a supplement to your existing emergency fund, fine. But it is not a substitute.
Thanks, Greg. Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Everyone knows that business is all about numbers. Consider the numbers the state of Michigan can offer your business, like being a top 10 pro-business state, or 2,000, the number of unnecessary regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years, and 6, Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climate, which all adds up to the one state that has all that and more. Michigan. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Glad you're with us on this Wednesday, May 18. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: Clinton and Sanders split Kentucky and Oregon. A new regulation expected today will make more than 4 million more Americans eligible for overtime pay. New documents show Bill Clinton traveled without Secret Service at times on the private jet operated by convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Earthquakes reported this morning in Ecuador and South Korea. The Braves fired Freddy Gonzalez, but still did not get their 10th win last night. Oh, and wait to hear you hear how the firing went down. Mike's got that story in a few minutes. And a list of the drunkest cities in America. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, it's a real roll of the dice for Senate Republicans when it comes to Merrick Garland, the man that President Obama has nominated for the Supreme Court. The GOP thinking has been this: if we can just stonewall Garland long enough, a Republican may win the presidency in November and pick someone more conservative than Garland. But if Hillary Clinton wins the White House, she could nominate someone further to the political left. Here's Boston Globe columnist Scott Lehi. Scott, how do you see it?
These guys have been waiting, hoping that they would be able to elect a conservative Republican president. And so they've been stalling Barack Obama's nominee, Merrick Garland, for the job. They've been trying to stonewall and put any hearing, any vote off until after the election, or until after the election of a new president, thinking that then they would get a conservative justice. Now, with Trump, erratic as he looks, it looks like, I think most people think, Hillary Clinton is the odds-on favorite. That changes the whole calculus. Do you say, hey, we wait and see if Trump gets elected? Or do you say it's more likely Hillary will get elected and we will get a more liberal justice than Garland? We should confirm him now. That, I think, is the way the calculus changes there a little bit. Garland is a centrist, very well-qualified guy. A lot of Republicans have previously said they would like to see him on the court. They have a chance to put him on. And do you take this gamble? It's a little dirty Harry question. Do you feel lucky? Well, if you feel like Trump can win, and if you feel like Trump actually would nominate a conservative, a more conservative to the court, maybe you wait. But if you think Hillary's likely to win and go with someone more liberal than Garland, maybe you should confirm him now. And I think that the latter case is what what some Republicans are starting to think.
Yeah, and I think there was a report that came out of the meeting on Thursday between Trump and House Speaker Ryan that Mr. Trump was being pressed for names as to who he might nominate to the Supreme Court.
Yes, that's one of the things that's been suggested by Lynch Priebus and other people, to say, look, he should come out and affirmatively say, placate conservatives by saying these are the types of people he would nominate. And he has previously suggested other people who would not necessarily fit in with what conservatives would want, and he's kind of flopped around on abortion, which is a huge issue of theirs. They obviously distrust him the public taking of land for eminent domain, public taking of land for private purposes. So they have a lot of concerns about where he would be on some of these legal issues and what his justices would look like.
Mm. Firmly with tongue in cheek, I will say, I'm sure whoever Mr. Trump nominates will be great and very, 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 very well qualified.
Everyone will say he's the best justice ever nominated.
That's right. We're speaking with Scott Lehigh, political columnist at the Boston Globe. His piece is called Trump and the Supreme Court Fight. What kind of time frame do you think Republicans in Congress are on, or in the Senate at least here, Scott?
Well, we've watched Jeff Flake, Senator from Republican from Nebraska, say last week, geez, if it becomes clear here that we probably aren't going to win this election, we should get this guy in and confirmed as quickly as possible. I have to say, I think that once Labor Day rolls around and you start to look at polls, and both conventions have come and gone, people have sort of started to fire their ammo at the other side, you get an idea. So I would think sometime in mid-September, people will get a sense of what this campaign really looks like. And I have to say, I'm one who thinks that Hillary will have quite a pronounced advantage. And I expect that reality to sink in. Now, I could be completely wrong. Maybe it will show Trump, I think, but I just don't see that happen. So I think sometime in September, these guys will have to say, wow, things don't look that good for us, but we may want to move on in Congress.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Lehigh, Boston Globe columnist. 21 minutes now before the hour on this morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, here's a lesson for businesses on how not to fire someone. The Atlanta Braves relieved manager Freddy Gonzalez of his duties yesterday morning, which didn't come as much of a surprise to anyone, including Gonzalez, given the team's 9-28 start to the season, including a dismal 2-17 record at home. Unfortunately, another reason why Gonzalez wasn't surprised was because he already knew he was being fired before he even met with Braves management. You see, according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Gonzalez, who was with the team on the road in Pittsburgh, was accidentally emailed an airline itinerary on Monday night, confirming his solo flight back to Atlanta. So, after quickly putting two and two together, Gonzalez already had his bags packed when he met with team officials the next morning.
Nice.
We hear about that kind of stuff happening more and more these days, right?
That's unbelievable.
That is no good. I feel bad for him in a lot of ways, not only because of this, but also because they basically like sold off every good player that they had on the Braves. They're in rebuilding mode right now.
Not the problem.
He's really not the problem right now, but they got to do something, I guess.
The guy from AAA came up last night, I guess, to manage the game against the Pirates.
Yeah.
They promptly fell down by 7 runs in the first inning, I think. That's how that went down.
Yeah.
This happened to me one time, by the way.
Uh-oh.
When there were two different operations under one umbrella.
Okay.
And I was being named the person to take charge of both operations.
Okay.
My colleague had not been told.
Oh.
Well, I'm sorry. Right. He had not been told. So I show up on Monday morning thinking that he is going to begin to show me how things work. And he's like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you got fired.
So what do you do? Did you like run out of the room?
Yeah,
I
crawled under the desk and stayed there for about 4 hours until the dust settled over. Apparently, he had been mailed his pink slip home.
Oh, my gosh.
And it did not arrive.
Well, that was
the time he came back to work on Monday.
That's a different era, wasn't it?
Imagine?
Mailing the pink slip
mailing
home.
The pink slip. That was the courtesy afforded to him.
And we have some good news, Gordon, this time for the angry Splash Mountain lady. She apparently isn't angry anymore. You might remember back in March, a woman named Jordan Alexander catapulted to internet fame after a picture of her angry angrily riding the Splash Mountain ride at Disney World went viral. The sourpuss on Jordan's face was because her husband, who had promised to ride her favorite ride with her, chickened out at the last minute. Jordan's very unhappy expression led to a slew of memes, with her essentially becoming the human version of Grumpy Cat. She even created her own Twitter handle, at Angry Splash Lady. Well, all that changed on Monday when Jordan returned to Disney and posted a new picture on Twitter of her riding Splash Mountain, her arms still crossed, but this time with her smiling from ear to ear next to her husband Steve, who looks less than thrilled to be there.
He's the new Grumpy Cat?
Yeah, I guess he is.
That's funny, because the picture, I think, more than anything else, she's so grumpy, but she's so offset, I'm looking at it now, by the other three people who are in the picture with her.
Yeah.
The guy behind her, his eyes are closed, like he's screaming, like in an absolute thrill. The girl next to him, you know, looks partially scared, and then there's a woman in front of her who seems to also be having the time of her life. So she is just juxtaposed against these other people who are having these wonderful Disney memories.
She was easy to spot. And she seems to have given up on, who knows, she could have maybe cashed in a little longer on this angry thing. You know, she went happy, I think, a little too quickly, probably.
Oh, that's a good point.
It seemed like she gained a little bit of fame here. Again, she had a decent amount of Twitter followers, and it seemed like she was kind of making a thing out of it.
Well, the headline now, Angry Splash Mountain Lady, now happy.
Yes. I mean, it's just Disney. They want to make everybody happy, right? Obviously.
That is true. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Here's to the innovators and job creators. Dell is proud to support small businesses everywhere with reliable, award-winning technology powered by Intel Core processors, created to give your business 4 times faster performance and cut downtime by 50%. During Small Business Month, enjoy 35% off select business PCs, plus always get free shipping and advice from Dell's dedicated experts. Visit Dell.com/radio to discover how we can help you do your best work. Intel Inside, powerful solution outside. Thanks for being with us, and a good Wednesday to you. 9 minutes now before the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the Labor Department today will finalize a rule extending overtime protections to 4.2 million more people currently not eligible under federal law, boosting wages by $12 billion over the next 10 years. The rule doubles the salary threshold below which workers automatically qualify for time and a half wages to about $47,500 a year. When it comes to the economy, we are of two minds in the midst of an election race that largely hinges on the issue. According to a new AP poll, we're strikingly pessimistic about the national economy, but comparatively upbeat about our own financial circumstances. While 42% describe the economy as good, two-thirds describe their own households as faring well. Donald Trump and Megyn Kelly appear to have called a truce. The two sat down for a much-hyped interview that was the culmination, at least for now, of their frequent sparring between the presumptive Republican presidential nominee and one of the biggest stars on the conservative-leaning Fox News channel.
Absolutely, I have regrets. I don't think I want to discuss what the regrets are, but absolutely, I could have done certain things differently.
The interview was taped last month and aired last night. The Senate has confirmed the long-stalled nomination of Eric Fanning to be Army Secretary, making him the first openly gay leader of a U.S. military service. The voice vote's approval came after Kansas Senator Pat Roberts dropped his opposition to Fanning in a dispute over Obama administration efforts to close the prison at Guantanamo Bay and transfer detainees to the U.S. Was Playboy founder Hugh Hefner an enabler for Bill Cosby? A lawsuit filed against the comedian and Hefner says he was. The suit filed by a former model claims the Playboy honcho either knew or should have known that Cosby had a thing for drugging and sexually abusing women and enabled him to do so. And for the third year in a row, Washington ranks as the fittest city in the U.S., with Minneapolis coming in second, rounding out the top five in the American Fitness Index, Denver, Portland, and San Francisco.
Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
Fittest city?
Yeah.
What about, I thought this was the city of fat cats, like fat bureaucrats.
But they walk. Right? They walk they around, walk. Too.
Mm-hmm. Minneapolis, that's good, because shivering burns calories, yeah. So you can stay fit.
That's for sure.
And by the way, you're catching some grief on Twitter now with your visit to Amsterdam.
I am?
Yeah.
Because you started it.
I tried to trap you last segment, last newscast, saying how much weed did you smoke, and you, of course, denied it. But there's somebody
of
now
course.
Who's...
of course you denied it.
one of our affiliate guys who does traffic at KOA in Denver says, so back from Amsterdam, let Jen Koschenka know that today is random drug testing day. Hashtag welcome back. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. What's going on in the Badger State? Wisconsin apparently has a growing reputation for its love of booze. Just 6 months ago, the city of Appleton was rated Wisconsin's drunkest city. Now it's been upgraded to the drunkest city in America by the same organization, 24/7 Wall Street. The group analyzed self-reported data from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. The Appleton Post-Crescent newspaper says the group also noted the density of bars in Appleton at 4.4 for every 10,000 residents, ninth highest ratio in the country. But it's not just Appleton in Wisconsin. Eau Claire, Green Bay, Fond du Lac, La Crosse, Madison, Oshkosh all cracked the top 10 non-Wisconsin cities in the top 20 drunkest cities in America list. Fargo and Grand Forks, North Dakota, Ames and Iowa City, Iowa, Mankato, Minnesota, Missoula, Montana, Lincoln, Nebraska, and Corvallis, Oregon. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Let's take a moment to share a message from our sponsor, Google. You might be surprised how many people are looking for your business on Google every day, not necessarily by name, but by the products or services that your business offers. When people are searching for these things, it means they're interested in them, and that's exactly when your business should be there. The good news is it's easy to make that happen. Just run an ad on Google. You don't have to be a marketing genius either. Creating an ad takes just a few minutes. Head on over to g.co/GordonDeal to learn more. There's even a special offer waiting for you. That's g.co/GordonDeal.